Real Romance Stream Mini, brought to you by the Undercover Capes Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody!
Why are you so loud?
Oh, should I do it a little softer? Hey, everybody! Welcome to Real Romance. I'm Robert. This is Brittany.
Hello.
We talk about movies, but also we talk about shows. And this is the last stream mini we're going to have in season two. It's so sad, isn't it?
Oh, gosh.
You're not sad?
I'm tired.
You're tired of watching all these shows sitting at home doing nothing? Like, that's like your dream.
No, I'm not tired of watching all the shows. I'm tired of everything, just life. I could use a break.
Yeah, I get that. For this last episode, we wanted to give you a wide variety of different types of shows that we haven't been able to cover in the last few because they've all kind of been on theme. But this one is just what sounded good to us.
If you hear any snorting, it's because our little chonky friend decided to join us for the day. We're going to start right off and just jump in. The first show on our list is Marvel 616.
Oh, what a fun show that is.
So, for those who don't know, 616 is the number of the world of, like, mainstream Marvel comics.
We know about the multiverse and how there's all these different universes, the Ultimate Universe, the Anime Universe, whatever it is. But the base Marvel universe is universe number 616. And so they titled the show that, but it really explores how Marvel impacts the world around us and how our experiences within this world have created Marvel.
It covers everything from Japanese Spider-Man to stage performances, different forgotten characters and toys, cosplay, all of the above.
Mm-hmm. And it also highlights certain types of creators, like women in comics and their representation, Hispanics and worldwide, you know, art, bringing different flavors and different cultures into comic books.
Really letting everyone see a little bit of themselves in a Marvel character.
And I think the show actually does a really good job trying to be inclusive, because for far too long, it's kind of been this boys club where, you know, if you're not a white guy who can afford all the comics every month, you're not allowed to be a fan.
Well, here's how I think of it. So, in the real world, there are lots of different people of race, gender, culture, background, like, all different sorts of things. So why wouldn't Marvel characters be like that as well?
Because in the beginning, they were trying to sell to a certain demographic, and they laser-pointed on, okay, we'll go for the teen to young adult,
actually,
white male.
Actually, that's not
demo.
True. In the beginning, there were lots of different characters, but then the comic world busted, and then they had to focus and pick a section. Because back in the day, there were actually a lot more women in comics. Now, they're probably still mostly white, but it is what it is at
it
this
is
point.
What it is.
We can only move forward. We can't change the past.
Right. So, the show itself, each episode focuses on a different thing, and I actually thought one of the most interesting episodes was Japanese Spider-Man. Most of the other episodes had a generic theme around comics, and they could build the story around it. But the Japanese Spider-Man episode actually says, look, Marvel's a big deal, it was really hitting it off in the 70s, but the Japanese market wasn't picking up on it despite loving manga. So, they made a low-budget TV show where they took the very, very basic premise of Spider-Man, and they made it entirely Japanese.
Bro, Spider-Man was wild over in Japan.
Yeah, you talk about, oh, I'm swinging from a web. This motherfucker has, like, robot car slash, what was it, a Sphinx? No.
Yeah, it was a Sphinx.
A Sphinx.
It was a Transformer before there were Transformers. Literally, this show birthed Transformers and Power Rangers and a lot of the other shows that come from Japan that we care about today.
And the idea of the, you know how the Flash's suit comes out of his ring and he kind of runs into it? Well, the Japanese, like, took a really raw idea of that, and they're like, well, Spider-Man suit, we'll just kind of throw it in the air, it'll fall on his body, and then it'll just, like, be on his person.
If you can, just watch a clip of them, just, like, the suit coming out and just kind of falling in front of him.
It's some of the craziest stuff. Oh, there was a main actor who played
Peter Parker. Well, he wasn't Peter Parker, but the Japanese version of
right.
Peter Parker.
Right, and he's not a young scientist nerdy kid. He was actually a stunt driver, right? He was a racer, like a drag racer. So there's the guy that plays the main character, but there's another guy who's doing all the in-suit stuff, and he was told by the producers, okay, you just gotta duck down really low and act like a spider.
They brought the producer on, and he was like, yeah, I was, like, really harsh on him. I made him get lower, and he was, like, crawling across the ground.
It's like, you gotta look like a spider. And they also made him do all his own stunts. And so, like,
without wires?
He's, like, climbing up buildings. Like, literally climbing up buildings with no safety net.
Just... He said the worst thing was he had to run away from a dog and climb up a tree. But the dog, like, bit him.
Yeah.
And he didn't have padding or anything.
The whole episode is absolutely wild. And it's a real culture shock, kind of showing how Marvel has permeated the world in a way that's kind of outside of New York City.
Japanese Spider-Man wasn't available to the United States until very recently.
Yeah, like 5 years ago, maybe. Thing was released to the public.
We were thinking about watching it. It might be a fun time.
Yeah, we might watch a few episodes, let you know what we think. Women in Comics was also a huge one.
I really liked the Forgotten Characters one. It talks about all these random characters from back in the day. Some of them had more successful runs than others, but...
Most of them pretty unsuccessful.
I really liked this team of characters called Brute Force, and basically they were this group of animals who a scientist modified them into robot animals.
Right, and they also made them smart, like they enhanced their brain so they could think.
Well,
like
not the do. Not the bear. The bear was dumb. Remember, it talked about the bear being incredibly dumb still.
Yeah.
Which what? Like, there's... Okay, you think, oh, well, there's a bear. Okay, that kind of makes sense. There's a lion who turns into a motorcycle, which is hilarious. There was a kangaroo who was stealthy for some reason.
He has, like a pistol and has
a silencer. And
there's an eagle that has special rocket jets because...
So it can fly.
But super fly.
And then there's a dolphin.
But...
He has machine guns.
And arms and legs. And his tail is just kind of like...
It's in this...
Flipping.
Yeah, in armor, and it just kind of hangs out. And if Marvel doesn't make a Brute Force TV show, I'm going to be mad.
They just did. They made a full episode nearly about Brute Force.
They need a whole ass episode.
That's all they're getting.
A whole show.
That's all they're getting.
Why?
They're not getting anything but that 2 minutes from Paul Scheer. Which also, by the way... There were 4 issues of Brute Force, and Paul Scheer's like, oh my god, I love this. And we're like, wow, he's really diving into this. He actually wrote Deadpool Biannual number 1 featuring Brute Force back in the mid-2000s, or 2010s, I think, because I knew I'd recognize the characters, and I went back and looked for the comic, and this motherfucker wrote it. Way to phone it in. He'd already written them, and then he's like, wow, I discovered this new team.
Well, they probably reached out to him to make this faux documentary
style. You're a liar.
Because of that. I mean, Marvel 616 is really fun if you're ever in the mood to learn more about some of the Marvel, the comics, the, you know, just the whole industry outside of the movies.
Right, because, I mean, like, it talks about the whole cosplay idea and what cosplay is and why Marvel draws people into that.
Damn, some people are good. I was impressed with our cosplay last fall, and these people are amazing.
I've cosplayed like 3, maybe 4 times, and half of them have been during Halloween, so that doesn't really count. The people who are featured in this,
they're more professional than us.
They
for sure.
Definitely have a lot more skill and a lot more dedication.
If
and
someone wants to fund us a 3D printer, I think we could really up our cosplay game.
A 3D printer, like a good one, would
anybody got a spare one?
I know, right? Like, obviously, shipping's a bitch, but if you don't charge us for the printer itself, we'd pay shipping,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, we'd pay shipping.
Yeah, for sure. But the show itself is really fun and available on Disney Plus.
So the next one, we're actually going to talk about 2 shows. One we finished completely, and one we're about halfway through. One show is called We Are the Champions, and it's hosted by Rainn Wilson. And the other show,
he's Dwight from The Office, right?
Correct. Okay. Very nice.
See.
And
some people aren't as good with names. I have to throw it out for context.
Google is a thing.
Ugh.
The other show is called Home Game, and it's narrated by Mark Strong. I don't know who that is.
He plays the bad guy in the Shazam movie. Context.
Bruh. His name is basic. Mark Strong. Those are very basic ass names. Rain Wilson is a much more distinct name.
Wilson is extremely basic.
But Rain?
Rain is
everywhere. How many people you know named Rain?
Not a whole lot.
Exactly. So We Are the Champions is more about oddball competitions. Home game is more traditional games from countries around the world.
Right.
We Are the Champions does have a couple episodes that are not in America, but overall, it is very about weird things here in America.
Okay, so both shows are half-hour-long episodes. Both are limited series, but they'll probably expand to second and third seasons because there's just enough content there. So in this show, you have things like roller derby and free diving and a lot of things that are international.
Right.
We watched 3 episodes of this one, and this is the one that I was first interested in. But then when We Are the Champions came out, we watched an episode and we fell in love and we finished the whole thing.
So the first episode we watched was about the Highland Games, which, in case you don't know, is this set of competitions. How would you describe them? They're kind of like strongman competitions in Scotland.
It's kind of like in the Olympics where they have things like shot put. They have all these things, and I'm trying to think, they're like track and field events, but specialized for Scottish tradition.
One that they take this giant pole, and it's very hard to do, and you basically, you pick it up. Like, it looks like a telephone pole.
It's a telephone pole.
And you pick it up, you run with it, and then you try to yeet it over, and
you're what?
You yeet it. I mean, basically, that's what you do. And it needs to land once and flip all the way over.
Right, you have to flip the pole. And the pole, like, what would you say? It's at least 15 feet. Probably 20 feet tall.
I mean, it's pretty tall.
Yeah, it's long and it's heavy. And so you have to, like, get underneath it and create enough momentum to make it fall end over end. Very difficult. But there's also, they throw stones. They throw hammers. It's not so much like running and swimming and long endurance, but it's more about keeping upper body strength and center of gravity. I don't know.
Do you remember in Luck of the Irish? I know it's Ireland and not Scotland.
But it is very similar. It's very similar.
Scotland and Ireland both have versions of these Highland Games.
And I think they actually danced some too in the Highland Games. There was like dancing competitions too. That was a really fun one. But that's something that is normal, right? You think of a normal sport. Oh, yeah, you know.
I mean, some of you probably have heard of that.
Throw a heavy item. That sounds kind of like a sport. Well, the other two episodes we watched are just so fucking off the wall. That's why we chose these specifically. Because some of the others, like roller derby. You've heard of roller derby. You've never heard of, what's the name of this mouth?
Cockburu, I think is how you pronounce it.
Cockburu.
We'll go with that. Okay, why don't you describe the game?
It is in a country that I can't pronounce, but it is in the Middle East, akin to like Pakistan.
It's Central Asia. It's Kazakhstan.
But not like Borat. It's like an actual country. What they do is on horseback, it's like they're playing polo, but there are these two large rings at either side of the pitch.
Kind of look like wells.
Yeah. And they have to take the ball and take it from wherever it is. They have to steal it from the other guys and run it over and put it in the well. But instead of a ball,
it's a dead goat.
It's a corpse.
It used to be played with wolves. Basically, they would come back and a wolf would be trying to hurt their flock, so they would kill the wolves.
And rather than just like cook it and dispose of it or do whatever.
I guess you didn't eat wolf back then.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But instead of doing something smart with it, they would just like fling it around and play like keep away with the wolf.
I mean, everybody needs to have fun sometimes.
But wouldn't you say this is like a really crazy game of keep away?
It's like polo and keep away, but with a dead carcass.
Right. And because it's 33 pounds or kilograms, I can't remember which.
Kilograms,
but this,
I believe.
This thing is heavy. So not only do these guys have to ride around on horseback, but they have to lift and carry and maneuver this goat.
Oh, and these guys are intense.
And they have to steal from each other. So they're like yanking it and pulling it and really getting,
like, at one point,
really aggressive.
In the episode, one of the guys fell off, and the other team was like, look at him, he stands up, he's not that hurt. Like, bro.
Oh, no, and it's like a tradition to, like, not ask for medical attention. Like, you could have, like, a broken foot or hip or something.
Keep playing.
And they're like, if you ask for a doctor, it's dishonor on you, dishonor on your dead carcass.
It was crazy, but I thought it was fun. I would love to see a match.
It was fun, but it's so barbaric. And then the other one is called Mokpung Lampet, okay?
We assume we're pronouncing these wrong.
We are going to butcher it, but that's okay.
We tried.
But this sport is in Bali.
Did you like this more or the other one better?
I personally liked Lampet. I think it is a bit more straightforward and less, like, I don't know, like, death-related.
Now, I will say that Makpun Lampet is only played in this, like, one village.
Yeah, it is.
So I can't pronounce the name of it.
It is very, very, very local. But essentially, they grow rice, and they flood their rice fields, like they always do every year. And they use water buffalo and some, like, carts, right?
Plows.
Okay, so they're plows. And they get pulled behind these water buffalo, and they drag them through to till the earth for the rice. But they found out many, many years ago that the water buffalo were still full of energy even after the day. So they would kind of set them off and race them against each other.
They'd be like, my water buffalo is faster than your water buffalo.
I want a water buffalo.
Why can't I have a water buffalo?
And so they run and run and run, and they decide to race their water buffalo. And meanwhile, these poor schmucks are just hanging on to the plows on the back, hanging on for dear life. It's like 100 meters long. It's just a really fun race.
It looks super fun. Basically, they do it in heats. Mm-hmm. And where there'll be three, and then the final race is just one against one.
Yeah, and so it's really just a fun, kind of like a little horse race. Like, you know how...
It's like chariot racing.
Yeah, and I think if there's like a season two or something of We Are the Champions, I think things like pig races or dog races would be really fun. Not your normal greyhounds, but...
You mean like weenie dogs?
Yeah, like the weenie dog races.
Then we get into We Are the Champions, which is...
It's a little more Americanized, and it's a bit more relatable in that... The races and things, or not the races, the events are things that you're like, oh, I've heard of that.
These are more in line with I could potentially participate as right. An average person.
It's kind of like weird superhuman sports. Like, okay, chili eating, for instance. There is a certain amount of skill to being able to eat quickly and to withstand pain. But any idiot could bite into a habanero pepper.
And try it.
And they might fail miserably, but anybody could do it.
Correct. So, I was pretty fond of cheese rolling.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the cheese rolling at?
England.
Now, this is a non-sanctioned event.
Yeah.
It used to be sanctioned, but there were too many injuries.
And then they were like, we're not doing it anymore. And they said, fuck you guys, we're doing it anyway.
So, it's a 200-yard hill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just an ordinary hill. This is the steepest effing hill you've ever seen.
It's like a 50-degree incline. And you think, oh, that's not bad. Like, you stumble and you're at the bottom before you catch your breath.
I mean, the one girl we followed, she has won it...
Three times. And she's going for her fourth.
And she, last year, she had popped her collarbone out of place. And you can't put it back. So now she just has this, like...
Big giant bump where her collarbone is.
On her shoulder. Like,
it's mostly people who've been doing it a long time. And it shows a lot of footage from years past of people just literally tumbling down this hill and just breaking bones and smashing into people.
We missed the cheese rolling part. They start with this taped up cheese.
We forgot.
They start with a round wheel of taped up cheese, you know, so you can eat the cheese later. And they roll it down the hill and you are chasing the cheese. Now, you're not going to catch the cheese.
But the whole idea is, oh, you're going to catch the cheese. But no one catches it because it moves so fast.
It moves like 80 miles an hour.
The goal is to be the first one to the bottom of the hill. Because the first one to the bottom is, like, symbolically the winner who caught the cheese.
And you take the cheese home.
Right.
You are going so fast that they have a rugby team at the bottom of the hill to catch you.
Right.
To catch people that, you know, are tumbling. And, dear Lord, people tumble. I mean, I'm sure that people have broken almost every bone. Other than, like, a spine.
Yeah. No, they haven't had any deaths. They said, look, no deaths. No permanent spinal injuries, but pretty much any broken arm, leg, hand.
Collarbone.
Yeah. But it's a really fun idea to roll and catch the cheese.
So what was your favorite?
Of all of them, I honestly think that I didn't really like the dog dancing or the hairstyling.
But the hairstyling was cool.
I'd actually read about frog jumping. It was based on a Mark Twain book.
I liked the frog jumping.
And apparently there's like this famous frog who jumped so far, and the guy who trained him like got this acclaim. So in Calabasas County in California, they have a frog jumping contest where they go out to the marshes.
It's Calaveras County.
Calaveras, I'm sorry. And they catch a frog. and they probably catch a lot of frogs to try to find the one that jumps the best. And the goal is to get as far as you can in three jumps in a straight line, and that is very important. Because if they divert and it's not in a straight line...
It's not as far.
It's not as far. They can only count as far as it is in a straight line. They take the frogs, they train the frogs, and then they pit their frogs against everyone else's frogs.
There are very strict rules about how you take care of your frogs.
Yes.
They have to be well taken care of and released after the thing is over.
It's very humane. They don't make frog legs after. You don't cook the loser.
You can't use the California red-legged frog because they're endangered species. So basically, you're looking for basic-ass bullfrogs.
But they are big-ass bullfrogs. Some of these things are as big as our dogs. No, not quite as big as our dogs. But they're
big.
They're big old frogs.
Like I said, when we were watching, the best frog gonna have a big-ass badonkadonk. Because that's where the jumping muscles are.
But them hind legs going crazy. Now, also, in the episode, everyone's like, I've put my whole life into this. Oh, it's so great. And a 12-year-old kid wins it all. And this, meanwhile, this guy, he almost wins it. And
he's been trying for 37 years.
No, and his frog was doing great. But the frog went off center on the third jump. And so he ended up only getting through two jumps, which was still enough to get him fifth place.
That's how long his frog had jumped. Also, in the episode, it talks about... Scientists say that bullfrogs can actually only jump about 3 feet in a jump. But because they have these quote-unquote jockeys, they do jump a lot farther. I think the record was like 21 and three quarters or something like that.
It was over 21 feet, and it was Rosie the Riveter won that back in like 84.
Here, it was 21 feet, 5¾ inches. And your frog also has to have a name. That was important.
Yes, because it's like a racehorse. It can be a goofy, weird, off-the-wall name, but it has to have one.
And if you win, they put your name and the frog's name in a little piece of cement.
Right. It's like the Walk of Fame in Hollywood, only for frogs. But yeah, you were kind of obsessed with the chili-eating contest, too, weren't you?
I'm going to enter a chili-eating contest now. I'm convinced I can do it.
Yeah, she wants to buy all these hot sauces, and she's like, oh, we're going to do it for Christmas, and all I'm going to get for Christmas... is heartburn, because she's gonna make me do it and I'm gonna die because I don't do spicy well, but I'll play along.
Message us if you want us to post a video on Facebook, please, or YouTube.
I'm gonna turn red.
It'll
absolutely
be hilarious.
No, it'll be scarring for my taste buds.
We'll do it after breakfast.
Okay, at least thanks.
You're welcome.
Let me have at least one meal that day.
But check those out. If you're looking for something more fun, I would say We Are the Champions. If you're looking to learn more about other cultures, then Home Games is where you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. And they're both on Netflix, and they're both only half-hour episodes, so they're really nice, bite-sized shows.
So the next show we watched was Queen's Gambit, which is a limited series based on this... Well, it's not a real person.
It's a novel. It's a fictional story, but it's based on actual, like, chess competitions.
I gotta say, like, we must be really bored because everybody in America out here watching this lady play chess.
I'm watching it and I'm like, wow, it's so interesting. When it really, it's just chess.
It's basically set during the Cold War era, and this girl, Beth, is this super smart, now orphan. Her mom is dead. She is living in this orphanage playing chess with the janitor. When she eventually gets adopted and she starts playing chess and she wins, and her mom, who has been kind of left by her husband but not divorced because that wasn't done back then, the mom was kind of an alcoholic.
Kind of.
And a drug addict.
And she passed it along.
So Beth starts winning competitions. Beth is played by Anya Taylor-Joy for most of the show.
Yeah, and she was in Split and New Mutants.
She's in a lot of things.
She's been in a lot of stuff.
She's got a lot of new stuff
coming
up.
A really great actress.
How to describe Beth? Beth is kind of cold, but she's not unfeeling. She's just very matter of fact.
And she's kind of a savant at chess, so everything kind of gets drowned out except for chess. And because of that, she comes across as cold and as uncaring, when really all she cares about is the game.
Most of the other characters, the main characters we meet, you do have Jolene, who is her childhood best friend in the orphanage. And she's really sad to leave Jolene in the orphanage, but they do reconnect later in life. And then the other three guys, there's Benny, Harry, and Towns, who are three dudes she meets and subsequently beats playing chess.
Yeah, because she beats everyone at some point.
And they all play a part in helping her in her quest to beat the Russians.
Right, because it's not like say, basketball, where it's like you're the best basketball player. The second best basketball player isn't really teaching you much, right? It's you being better, and by playing other people, you learn more about yourself. In chess, there's a lot of strategy, there's a lot of documentation on certain rules and moves and historic games that have been played.
There's a lot of just like...
There's a lot of studying.
This is how the chess players move. This is how everybody moved in this game. And I'm like, you really gotta read and memorize all this? This is a lot.
No, but
I could never play chess.
She has the natural ability to know, and she has like the instinct to win. These three guys, they really kind of help her learn the moves of others, the historic winning versus losing strategies. And even if she is, like, amazing, she still doesn't know the book learning of it.
Right. She does struggle quite a bit with alcoholism, and she's addicted to these, like, tranquilizers that they gave them in the orphanage.
Yeah, and so she, like, breaks in and steals them and, like, overdoses on these tranquilizers that they were giving children, because I guess it's the 50s, so they could get away with it.
Well, at that point, she broke in to steal them because they were mandated to stop giving them to the kids.
But they kept them on display, kind of like some trophy.
And these pills
stupid.
Are like, they look like candy.
Oh, and she pops them like them.
I've never seen pills that look so much like candy.
Oh, but these pills also kind of help her kind of get into the zone, right? She kind of goes wom wom and really kind of gets into her chess head.
And it's really about her journey to not only become better at chess and become like a grandmaster, but to kind of let go of her vices and realize that they were hindering her, not helping her all along. And just, I think it was a really, it was interesting, and it was sad. There were definitely really sad moments, and there was really touching moments.
But even though she's trying to win the U.S., she's trying to beat certain people, it's really about Borgov and the Russians, right? And so she goes to Russia. The Russians are, like, next-level chess players. I've often found that Russia is a real contender in pretty much any sport that we want to play.
They're except basketball. I don't think Russians play much basketball.
Russians really are a superpower.
Russians like them intelligent sports, you know, stuff like chess.
Yeah, they're very, very good. And so they work together collaboratively to beat their opponent. They think of it on a whole new level. The Russians actually won the dog dancing competition in We Are the Champions, too.
Yes.
But yeah, the Russians, they're just really, really tough to beat. And everyone is freaking out because maybe Beth might beat him. Maybe she won't. And she's been beaten by them before.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last episode or two really culminate in her going off against the biggest, baddest world leaders.
I will say,
in chess.
Spoiler alert, one of the most touching moments for me is when she goes to the janitor guy's funeral. And she finds out that despite the fact they didn't really keep in touch, he followed all her games and clipped all of the newspaper articles about her. And I just thought that was just so touching.
Mm-hmm. And so when she's doing so well, they asked her in an interview in Russia, hey, where did you learn? And she's like, I learned from this janitor. And he was one of the best players I knew.
She's like, I'm only giving this interview if you publish his name.
Right, because he deserves to be remembered as the man who made it possible for me to learn chess. And that was really touching. And another touching moment for me was when the one guy, he kind of looked like Marx. Because he had a big beard, and I think he was Russian.
Oh, the guy that was like Einstein meets Marx?
Yeah, and they play each other, and he's like, I've played and beaten the best people in the world, and this is by far the best game I have ever played, and you're the best player I have ever played.
And that was really touching.
And it's like, wow. It takes a lot to admit that to somebody, to say, look, not only are you my better, but you're the best, and you're going to beat Borgov. Next, we're going to kind of take a detour and talk about the Animaniacs.
Not the 90s one.
Right, the new 2020
Hulu reboot.
Now, normally when you think of a reboot, you think of like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, where it's like, you know, they completely redo the animation style, they redo the plot, they redo everything, and they start it from scratch. Not this time around. The Animaniacs...
It's more of a continuation than a...
Yeah, they're picking up where they left off. The animation style is the same. The character voices are the same. The general plot, which there is none, but let's just go with that. That is the same. But the laughs are all new, and they're all modernized for the year 2020.
Now, it is a Steven Spielberg's Animaniacs, and they do make fun of quite a few of Steven Spielberg's property. There was Jurassic Park.
They did Poltergeist.
That
was Spielberg, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, indirectly, but yes, in a way. There was E.T. And, I mean, that just to name a few. And there was also parodies of Bride of Frankenstein and It. They do make fun of gun control in a really funny episode called Bun Control, I think was the name of the episode.
And speaking of the Russians, they have a really hilarious episode where there is a Russian spin-off version of Animaniacs.
That was really funny.
So funny. And a lot of political jokes there, too. The jokes are mostly tongue-in-cheek, and they are very socially relevant. This was also made in, like, 2018.
Yeah.
So there was none of this new stuff with the 2020 election, nothing about coronavirus. This is all pre-2020 and the craziness that has happened
this year.
There was
also a really funny sketch about Fox News. I thought that was a really funny one.
Oh, yeah. The one with, it's not Tucker Carlson. It's like Tuck Buckerson.
No, it's Buck Tarson or something like that. Anyway, Buck Tuckerson.
Tuck Buckerson.
That's the one. We'll get it eventually. They call them all sorts of names. It's really funny.
Yeah, but they're making fun of, you know, talking heads and talking points and everything that the news tries to make people talk about and put words in your mouth. And the Animaniacs just really drive him crazy, which was very fun to see. And they drive everybody crazy.
I mean, they do. That's their thing. And then you've got Pinky and the Brain, who... What are we gonna do tonight, Brain?
The same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world. Da-da-da-da-da, Pinky and the Brain. The show, Pinky and the Brain, actually had its own show. This getting lumped in was perfect because we get both Pinky and the Brain, which is really fun, but better in short bursts, and Animaniacs.
Also, Pinky and Yakko are voiced by the same guy, Rob Paulsen, so kind of makes sense in a way.
But Pinky and the Brain is really fun. Wacko, Yakko, and Dot, all very fun and all very distinct personalities. I don't have a whole lot of memory of them from childhood. I know I watched some episodes on WB, but...
The main thing I remember was the country song, which is would have to be updated now because those aren't even the same countries we have.
Yeah, and there's actually quite a few songs in this show, too. They have the one called My Zit.
That was a really funny song. They have the one about the first ladies.
Mm-hmm. They had a song about reboots and remakes. Yeah, remakes and reboots. And that's in the very first episode. And they knocked that one out of the park because they themselves are kind of a reboot. They kind of joke about it there being songs too. There was a really, really fun sketch where there was an orchestra. The conductor's like... All these hokey folk music songs, they're beneath me. And so he's playing, like, Hall the Mountain King and all these things. And in the background, the Animaniacs are, like, throwing their monkey wrench into the whole...
Sabotaging it all.
The whole orchestra. And so it's, like, a 10 or 12-minute sketch. By God, that was some of the best work I've seen out of this show. So funny.
I personally really liked the scary Halloween-ish episode.
Yes, so
that
good.
That was really funny.
It was really great.
I
like the Pinky and the Brain one.
Yeah, but...
Quite a bit.
The one where it was like completely silent, there's no words, and you just see them trying to catch this vampire who's terrorizing the Warner movie lot, and it's all through security footage. That they thought that was really clever.
And that was like right at the very end. That was like a 3 or 4 minute.
It was
minute.
Very short.
But yeah, that was really, really great. Overall, I think they 100% nailed it. They poke fun at all their own properties, like Looney Tunes and Justice League, but you know, the Snyder Cut type thing. Highly recommend it. It's a super fun show, both for kids and adults. Kids won't get a lot of the tongue-in-cheek adult stuff, and adults can still appreciate it for being very childlike and innocent.
The next thing we spent a significant amount of time watching was game shows.
We waste so much freaking time on game shows.
I mean, we watch a lot of stuff. We watch, you know, The Masked Singer, which is kind of a game show.
Yeah, and then I Can See Your Voice, which is like a spinoff of The Masked Singer.
And then we watched, you know, we watched an episode of the new Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and a couple episodes of Card Shark. But the two main ones we've been watching are Weakest Link and Supermarket Sweep! Supermarket Sweep was my favorite game show back in the day. I would watch it all the time whenever it was on. Just saying, and I am going to be on it one day.
Honestly, Shop Till You Drop is better.
They're going to bring that back next.
I
think so. I have just a feeling.
All right. Speaking of reboots and remakes, okay? Have you noticed that pretty much all the fun game shows that we watched as kids or even like just before we were kids, are all making comebacks.
Match game?
Yeah. Like every single show that you're like, oh, that was such a fun game. Boom, it's coming back. They remade...
Whammy.
Yeah, the Pressure Luck, I think that one's called.
Yeah, well, I mean, it had a couple different names.
On Weakest Link, Jane Lynch is the host, and she's like a dead ringer for the original host.
She's like, very funny.
Like, she's a little bit funnier, but at the same time, she really has that dry...
She's not as mean as the original host. The original host was scary.
Like, yeah, she was very intimidating.
I feel like she would have made me cry.
For sure.
So the premise of Weakest Link, basically there's a group of contestants, I think they start off with nine? Eight. You have a round of questions, and you try to bank as much money as possible with correct answers.
Right, and you get higher and higher numbers the longer the chain goes. Now, if someone misses a question, you go back to that first spot, normally $1,000, but if somebody says the word bank before the question is asked, it stops there, it banks that number, and it starts back at $1,000. The problem here is that if you're too cocky, and you don't bank, and you miss it, all of the questions before you are essentially lost.
Or if you can't get a good chain going of money.
It's all like $2,000 and $3,000.
So you bank almost nothing. So, and then at the end of each round, the entire team votes for who they think is the weakest link. And you can either vote, you know, for who you think is the worst player, or you can use some strategy and vote off strong players, because at the end, it comes down to two players answering five questions each.
Head to head.
Whoever gets the most takes all the money they banked.
The highest number in the chain increases per round. So the first round, it's like 25,000. But by the end, $500,000 is on the line. But by that point, there's only three players still playing.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to get to that number, you'd have to have, I think, three full rounds of nobody missing a question.
Correct.
And in this game, it is very, very important to bank. They really prioritize banking your money in case someone misses.
The best strategy is to either bank after every single right answer or to try to run a chain as big as you think possible.
Right, but that comes with a lot of risk and reward. By banking after every question, it's low risk, low reward.
But you're getting some decent money.
Right, because you end up banking a lot. Where the pitfall lies in this game is really trusting in your teammates to know questions. Because one question might be about, you know, physics or astronomy or something. And you yourself may be really great and know all your planets and blah, blah, blah. But the next question is about pop culture, cartoons,
or trivia. Some of the
questions
are super easy. And I mean, they're pretty easy.
I think starting off, they're a lot easier.
But some of the questions are definitely a lot harder. And even though you or I may know the answers, it's not really fair to judge people.
Here's what I think. I think the questions are designed to have two or three fairly easy in a row, and then a hard question.
Probably.
And that's why it's like, oh, smallest state, that's Rhode Island. What is the state flower of Rhode Island? Like, shit, no one knows that, unless you live in Rhode Island. But yeah, nobody knows a lot of these really obscure things. And if you do, that's a really great way to try to increase. The last episode we watched, there was like a chain of like five in a row.
Oh, and this dude did not bank. And it was an easy question.
It was such an easy question, but he didn't bank. And so he ended up losing it for everybody. And he ended up still going to the finals, but he lost.
He deserved it.
But the other one, Brittany's absolute favorite, is Supermarket Sweep.
And it's got one of my favorite people, Leslie Jones.
Leslie Jones from Saturday Night Live and the Ghostbusters movie.
And other things.
And a few other things.
She is so funny.
She genuinely loves being there. Like, a lot of hosts, you can tell they're just there for the paycheck or because it was
a
job opportunity.
I honestly think that Leslie Jones loves Supermarket Sweep as much as I love it.
She went to NBC and she was like, hey, now that I have connections with NBC,
can I be the host of Supermarket Sweep?
I love it. And so they remade Supermarket Sweep. They tweaked the rules just a little bit.
But overall, it's pretty much the same game you remember from when you were a kid.
Right. So the premise is that you're in a supermarket. Now, it is a stage, but it is a functional supermarket that has a ton of different types of products.
Now, is that actual food?
I'm sure it is.
At least some of it.
Right, because a lot of them are like named brands, and you can tell by lifting them up that they have heft. Like, they have weight to them. They're not just empty cans all over the place. But the premise is that...
Get the turkeys!
There's a lot of mini games leading up to the Super Sweep, where...
Get the exotic cheeses.
And the... Brittany.
Sorry. I'm excited.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that.
That's my strategy.
Okay.
I'm gonna win Supermarket Sweep.
there are a lot of mini games for the first 15 minutes where you bank time to use toward your final sweep. You can also get money and prizes, but it's mostly time. With that time, you can spend all of it shopping in the supermarket. And the goal is to get as many big ticket items as possible into your cart and across the finish line before your time runs out.
There are also things where you can get bonuses, like inflatables have little bonus cards on them. You don't know how much each inflatable is worth, but you can only get one, so pick wisely. There is Leslie's shopping list, and it'll be three items, and if you get those three specific items,
you get $300.
And they're usually not high value items, so they're not normally stuff you would get.
Right, but they're things on theme. It's like, hey, we're gonna have a cookout, so I need some hot dogs, I need some charcoal, and I need
buns.
Yeah, or like, you know,
chips,
fireworks, whatever.
And then there are also, it depends on the episode, but there's also things like coffee, flowers, and sometimes the coffee will have your name on it, or sometimes you have to wait while the coffee person
makes your coffee,
quote unquote.
The original had like a candy machine,
coffee, and a coffee grinder.
I kind of missed that. They actually added in a couple of side characters in the show for Leslie to bounce off of.
Yeah.
There's the security guard
and there's
the cashier.
They're
not prominent in the show, but
they're on every episode.
They're a fun little addition to the show where it's like, oh, hey, there's the cashier. He has a line.
I do like at the end. So if you win the big sweep, then you get to play where you get these clues and you have to get to the product that is given by the clue.
Right.
Now, they have tweaked the rules so that you do three clues and you don't win. You win $25,000.
And that's normally pretty easy.
That was the what they won, I think, in the original.
Right, but most people can do the three pretty easily.
The next choice you have is, would you like to keep your $25,000 or do one more clue with add additional time for $50,000? And if you do that one, you get the choice of keeping your $50,000 or doing one last clue for $100,000.
But they only add like 10 seconds onto your time.
Right, but if you have a lot of time left, it might be to your benefit.
But we've seen that backfire because these one people had like over 40 seconds going for $100,000 and they still messed up.
It was right there. It was right in front of them.
But regardless of what happens, you still take home whatever you put in the cart. And normally this runs between $2,500 and $4,000. You know, it's a pretty good range. Most people score in the mid 3,000s.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if they don't get anything after that, they still get that money.
And they get them cool supermarket sweatshirts.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, they were all the same. Now, they let you design your sweatshirt. And I'm assuming they have probably like a set number of like designs that you can pick from. And colors.
Yeah.
And you get to pick and you get to make it and it looks so cool and I want a supermarket sweatshirt so bad.
We're going to be on the show, y'all. For sure.
Literally, I'm over our break. I'm about to make an audition tape and we're going to get on Supermarket Sweep. Leslie Jones, if you're out there, please put me on your show.
Yes. Very, very fun. And overall, it's a great time killer. Game shows are a weakness of mine. I love watching game shows. The final thing on the list, and I'm sure this is what everyone's been waiting for.
All 25 of you.
At once. There's listening parties with 25 people.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yes.
This podcast is only listening. You can only listen if there's 25 of you in the room at the same time.
You got to break the rules. Listen to our podcast in a big group.
Well, or you could play it over a Zoom meeting with 25 people.
That would work. Let's wrap it up with The Mandalorian, also known as the Baby Yoda Show.
He has a name now, Robert.
No, his name is Baby Yoda.
His name is Go-Gurt.
It's Grogu.
Go-Gurt?
Grogu.
Yodito?
Grogu. We just finished watching chapter 13, The Jedi. But we still watched four episodes before that. And we're going to talk about those briefly.
This is a very spoiler-heavy one. So if you have not watched The Mandalorian Season 2...
Then apparently you haven't been on social media at all because it's everywhere.
So pause this, go watch them, come back. You back?
After we've literally just spoiled Grogu.
Bro, it's a terrible name. No one gives a fuck.
I do.
I don't
hate the name.
It's literally almost the exact same name as that ugly alien baby from American Dad, Rogu. I'm not even kidding you. Let me show you this ugly baby. His name is Rogu.
Ew.
I'm not even kidding you.
Gross.
And they were like, you know what? That's a perfect name to name our baby, but it's got to be slightly different. So they added a Gro.
At the end of season one, Mandalorian had a chance to, get away from the Imperial soldiers, the stormtroopers,
mm-hmm.
with Baby Yoda and the robot, I forget his name,
Taika Waititi. He dead now, so
oh well.
R.I.P.
But he ends up taking the child away, and their goal is to find more of his species. More like him to take care of him.
Because he was told that other Mandalorians would know what to do with this child.
And at the end we find out Moff Gideon, who's the bad guy, he's in charge and he has a darksaber, so you know he's one with the Force and he's probably a bad guy.
I didn't know black sabers, lightsabers or whatever came in black.
Well, there's not a whole lot of them.
I've never seen one.
Right,
before.
White lightsabers and black lightsabers are much more rare than your blue, green,
red variety. I never seen a white one either before.
Yeah, well, the animated series really kind of expounded upon that.
I didn't watch that.
No, neither of us have watched Clone Wars or any of the animated stuff that happened. So
how dare we talk about it without watching it? We're missing so much.
Well, the problem is that a lot of the things happening in the show are being pulled from the lore developed in the animated series.
I hear that Disney has a guide to what episodes are super important to watch. So maybe that might be something to check out.
But we don't bother with that. All I know is that there's a few characters that everyone is crazy about. Some of them have already been introduced in the show. First couple episodes deals with Frog Lady.
The first episode was about the Marshal, and he finds out about this guy that has Boba Fett's armor, remember?
Yes. Yes, I do remember him. And they
played by Timothy Oldmanson?
Yes. And they go and they fight this big giant sand beast.
Tremors!
And he saves them for the sand people, right?
Yeah, them creepy people.
Yeah, and they end up, like, retrieving this special egg. But after that, there's a special mission that Mandalorian does where there's a frog lady, and she has not a backpack, but there's an aquarium on her back, and it's full of eggs. And she has to take the eggs back to her husband. They're going to create a new family, because apparently this is the end of their species, and this is the last remaining eggs for the species.
Mm-hmm. There's a problem. Baby Yoda wants to eat them.
Yeah, and he's just sucking them things like dumplings, and it is so funny and so cute. The rebels, the good guys, they start pulling them over and saying, like, hey, this isn't a registered vehicle. This is not okay. Please pull over. And Mando ain't having it, and so he ends up crashing his rig on a frozen planet. They go exploring, and there's a ton of spiders, and they're giant alien spiders, and it's super terrifying. That episode really made me very scared. Eventually, the rebel fighter pilots come and save them from the spiders, and they're able to
help them
kind
get
of
away.
Patch it together and leave. Episode 3, they reunite Frog Lady with her husband. He has to go on a special mission with
fellow Mandalorians.
Right, but they're different Mandalorians in
apparently,
that they can take off their helmets.
We find out our Mandalorian, Din, he was in a cult. Yay!
Well, at least according to other people. You know, they're saying that his faction, they're not true Mandalorian. They're kind of like an offset group. Kind of like LDS versus fundamentalist LDS. They're related in name only.
But they're not the same.
But they're not the same. They follow a different set of rules.
They lead him to where he can find Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
Or a Jedi. And that leads us into the last episode we watched. Now, I do want to point out, we saw Boba Fett's armor in the first episode, leading us to believe that maybe the sand creature-y thing ate Boba Fett. But then at the end of the episode,
we see Boba Fett.
Or is it?
Or what? Maybe one of his clones.
Maybe.
Right,
well,
we
Boba
don't know.
Fett is a clone.
Well, one of the clones that is Boba Fett. You understand where I'm coming
yes.
from.
So, yeah. We don't know. We don't know much about that. That's literally all we've seen. It was just a short. He didn't have any lines. We saw him at the end of the episode. That's it.
But the big, bad, amazing episode that everyone's talking about is Chapter 13, titled The Jedi. And we saw it, and I think this is probably the best episode we've had of the show so far.
I mean, some fans would argue with you, but I agree.
It felt very Star Wars without being too preachy.
It was also very modern Kung Fu movie-ish.
Yeah. Ahsoka Tano is originally from the cartoons. I think from the Clone Wars. She is a young Jedi who actually was a Padawan under Anakin Skywalker. And she ended up dropping out as a Padawan. So she's not technically a full-fledged Jedi.
No, she later completes her Jedi training.
Oh, she does?
I believe.
Okay. But she is featured in this. And this is many, many years after that. Because obviously this is after the fall of Darth Vader. So it's been long enough for Luke to be born and grow up. She is after some information Did she take over the village? Is that what it is?
That other lady took over the village.
Right. She and her army took over the village. And so Ahsoka Tano is coming and saying, look, you have information. I need it from her. Even though she's like killing off all the people in this village, she doesn't care about them at all. Ahsoka Tano doesn't care. She just wants the info. And so Mandalorian comes with the little baby, little child.
They come in and they're like, we need to know. Well, they basically get a bounty to kill Ahsoka Tano.
Right. And there's a spear made of
Mandalorian steel.
Right. The pure steel that his armor's made out of. It's very sacred to their people. And they say, look, you find her, you find the Jedi, you kill her, and it's yours.
So apparently Mandalorians are the enemy of Jedi.
Apparently it's an ancient feud or something. I consider myself a Star Wars fan, but I am by no means one of those deep dive extended universe kind of guys.
You ain't read the books?
I ain't read the books. I haven't seen the cartoons. I've seen the movies and maybe a couple of extras. I've read some comic books. That's pretty much it. Obviously, Mando goes to try to find her, and she thinks that he's to kill her, which, duh, that's the whole reason why he would have been there otherwise. But because the child is there, he's like, look, I need your help. Clearly this kid is important, and I was told the Jedi might be able to find his people, right?
And she's like, I can read his thoughts.
This guy's name is Grogu, and Grogu, he is a sad little man. He has a lot of trauma, and he is super attached to you.
He thinks you're his dad.
Daddy Mando. We learn a lot about Grogu in this episode. We learn a little bit more of his backstory, where he came from, what happened to him prior to getting found by the Mandalorian.
You forgot about the episode where he meets up with his old friends, Greef Karga and Cara Dune, and then they leave Baby Yoda at the school.
And he steals the macaroons.
And then he throws him up later.
And it's very cute. Also, one of the coolest scenes, he like throws his arms up in the air and like
a roller coaster.
Oh, it's so much fun. Also, Bryce Dallas Howard directs one of these episodes. Ahsoka Tano. Okay, so back to Ahsoka.
Yeah.
She is done almost perfectly for the cartoon.
Not enough, according to the fans.
There are some people who say that her Teku and Leku. That's the one. Leku, which is like her skin tendrils off of her head. These things aren't the right size. They're not long enough, blah, blah, blah. Pretty much, overall, it is a spot-on depiction of the character.
Listen, they tried the longer ones, but they couldn't do the stunts in them, and they were like, would you rather they be shorter and do cool stuff, or rather her just, like, barely move around? So, it is what it is. Cartoons are always exaggerated.
And by God, I thought they did an amazing job. You look at them side by side, perfect casting.
Sorry, Star Wars fans hate Star Wars so much.
Yeah, it is what it is. I have seen a lot of really bad adaptations from cartoons and comics to live action. This is about as close as you can get to being 100% accurate. I think there's very little to complain about. But also, like, the mindset of the character,
mm-hmm.
right? I feel like this is your first, really both of our first introduction to the character. Did you like Ahsoka Tano?
She was kind of a mean person, but I mean, I liked it well enough.
I think she's very badass and very, like, dark and sneaky.
I have real issues with Jedi. I don't like them.
Are you more of a Sith gal?
No, I don't like either. I really just think the whole idea that Jedi just can't have emotions is the dumbest thing. It's like trying to make priests not have wives and stuff. Like, they used to be able to have wives. I bet the Jedi used to be able to have emotions too.
I heard this thing where, like, somewhere in the extended universe, Luke Skywalker has a wife.
I have real issues with the Jedi, and that's why I like this so much, because it's focusing on a character that's completely not a Jedi, and I just don't...
That's why I like the Mandalorian, because he does not use the Force.
He's not a Jedi.
He's a bounty hunter.
I think his character is more interesting.
But you like the fact that Baby Yoda, aka Grogu, that he can use the Force.
Okay, yeah.
You like that?
Yeah, but he can't speak and tell me all this Jedi nonsense all the time.
Yeah, he does not speak like this.
I hope he never speaks like that. Do you know that there's another one of his species, and their name also starts with a Y? And so people were kind of mad that his
Yaddle.
Name didn't start... Yeah, sure.
But overall, I think they are fucking nailing. They are knocking this show out of the park. I'm really excited for the next episode. And that is actually dropping every Friday on Disney+. by the time this comes out, the new episode will be coming out, and we will definitely be watching it on Friday.
I'll be watching it while you're at work. Ha ha ha.
And then we'll watch it again, because screw you, and I'm watching it.
Spoil everything that happens.
It's not like I'm not on Twitter all day and I can't get spoiled myself.
That's because you're stupid.
Yeah, I know. I actually got spoiled on a picture of Ahsoka Tano before the episode. I was scrolling through and some asshole posted it. And I'm like, you couldn't give it 4 hours? I'm up at 9 a.m. on a Friday morning and you couldn't even wait?
Because you weren't even at work that day.
No. And so it's like, it's Black Friday. You couldn't just wait a few hours to post something on the fucking internet? Just let people enjoy things.
No, nobody can let anyone enjoy anything because they're like, well, you should have watched it sooner. Bro, I didn't have the luxury to stay up.
You watched it like 3 a.m., a-hole. Yeah.
Well, and you really should know better. You should just not get on Twitter on Fridays. That is your own fault. If you could learn some self-control.
I have a problem. Rundown. What was the best show we saw this month?
Animaniacs and Supermarket Sweep.
I gotta go with Mandalorian, man. It's just so much freaking fun. And I mean, Marvel 616 is like, it's near and dear to my heart. I really enjoy Marvel stuff.
A really solid month for streaming for us.
Yeah, we didn't watch a bad thing all month long.
We've definitely watched some things that were not as enjoyable, but we enjoyed every single bit of what we watched.
Yeah.
We just ran out of time to finish some of it.
Right, and we definitely could have watched one or two, but we wanted to make sure this was out in time because we have this episode, and then the next episode, we're going to cover all the movies we watched in the month of November. And then that's it for season two.
I'm very busy right now, so I need as much time as possible to edit because I've got to get everything ready for Christmas. Because for the first time ever, we hosted Thanksgiving. And it looks like we're going to be hosting Christmas because earlier this summer, my parents had a house fire. And though everyone is okay, their entire house basically has to be redone due to smoke damage. So there's not really room at the place they're staying to host Christmas.
Right, unless you count like a small RV as Christmassy, which it just can't.
It does not fit six of us.
It can't accommodate. So there's going to be a lot of planning involved there. There's going to be a lot of things. And we're still going to be watching. We're still going to be recording. And I'm sure that we'll find things that we want to talk about. Moving into season three, we want to kind of change the structure of a few of the shows. We'll probably be updating our titles of shows and our, what is the word, like...
Logo?
The logo.
I'm working on a new logo.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully something a little bit more updated, a little newy. So that's pretty much what we've got for you today. As 2020 comes to a close, we hope that next year's better for you, because this year wasn't good for hardly anybody.
It was garbage!
Follow us on all forms of social media. Hit it.
At Real Romance UCPN on Twitter. At Real Romance on Instagram and TikTok. We also have email address. That's realromancepod@gmail.com. If you want our individual stuff, I'm at BanffingBob on Twitter. Brittany is at BookNerd528. I mean, we love hearing your comments. We love hearing you get back with us. Also, we've been taking part in some kind of live shows with
kind of like Mystery Science Theater type. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because our one of our fellow movie podcasts, Cinema Crusaders, they are doing a live stream of old, not
public domain.
Public domain. I was thinking copyright. That's wrong. They watch some public domain movies and we riff on it and we talk and sometimes we drink and it's just a really fun time. So if you want to hear us live and you want to kind of watch a movie with us, I believe the next one is going to be House on Haunted Hill, but I can't 100% vouch because we don't have it in our files yet. We know that it's going to be really fun.
It's going to be the Sunday after this releases, I believe at 2 p.m.
If all goes to schedule, it'll be this Sunday at 2 p.m. So please check that out as well.
If you want more information on that, I believe it's on Undercover Capes on Twitter.
You can follow at Undercover Capes or at Comic Crusaders, and both of those are pretty good sources for everything that Al has to offer. Also, big shout out to Josh and Al, who make pretty much everything possible for us. So give them a follow on Twitter as well. Until next episode.
I hope you liked the dog TikToks of one of our little nuggets, Cassie, that I posted. So they were pretty cute. She was playing with some bubbles and some other antics. But until then, we'll talk at you later, I guess.
We are kind of talking at them, aren't we?
What else would you call this?
I don't know.
That's just something my dad says. Talk at you later.
Talk at you later?
Something my dad says.
All right. Well, until next time, keep it real.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Real Romance Stream Mini, brought to you by the Undercover Capes Podcast Network. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe, and to share with your friends.